We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Okay, everyone. Good afternoon. Good morning. Wherever you are, we are so pleased that you're joining us today for our webinar on Tier 3 Behavior Planning for School and District Leaders. So if you are a caffeine consumer, get yourself a big cup of tea, coffee, soda, and get ready because we have a lot of great information to share with you today. My name is Maureen Halton. I am on the marketing team here at Branching Minds. For those just joining us, welcome. We're going to talk Tier 3 behavior planning today. My colleagues Trudy and Chris are on the line. Finally, wrapping up my intro here. For anybody who might be new to Branching Minds, we're so happy to host you for today's webinar. We are an MTSS platform and professional services company who really exists to help make your MTSS vision a reality. Or if you don't have an MTSS vision yet, we can help you with that too. And really, our goal is to help you wrangle all the different data that you have from different systems and spreadsheets into a single place so that you can figure out which students are struggling, why, what to do about it, document the work collaboratively, and then really for the school and district admins here to look to use a system lens to figure out how are we doing across grade levels, across schools, where do we need to reallocate resources. So if you haven't heard of Branching Minds before, we invite you to go to our website, branchingminds.com. We also have a ton of MTSS resources, like a ton. Guides, blogs, webinars, you name it, we probably have it. We feature two of them here. We invite you to sign up for our weekly resources digest. We also have a podcast. If that is your cup of tea or, in my case, coffee, please check it out. We would love to connect with you. And without further ado, I want to say one more hello to people in the chat. I see New York City, Arizona, Oregon, Texas. Love to see it. Keep engaging in the chat while I introduce your presenters for today. We are joined by two very brilliant behavior folks. We have Chris Cosbrook from Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools. He is the district MTSS specialist. And my colleague Trudy Bender is also here. She is our senior manager of thought leadership content at Branching Minds. She is also the former coordinator of district behavior intervention at Waco ISD in Texas. Chris, Trudy, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today and being willing to lend your time and expertise.
Thank you. Chris, do you want to introduce yourself first?
Yeah, good. I was going to say good morning. I guess I need to get that cup of coffee. I was trying to think of different time zones, but I think everyone's probably in the afternoon. But welcome. I am so thrilled to be here with you. It is such an honor. And so what I want to do with my intro is to kind of share. You can see my intro right there. But I do want to kind of pull out a couple things, a few personal and a couple professionals, because some of you may be, well, where is Charlotte, North Carolina, and what is Charlotte-Mecklenburg School all about? And so we are a very large district. We have about currently right now we have 184 schools, and I say currently because we are in the process of building several elementary schools and high schools, and we serve over 145,000 students, and we are broken into 9 learning communities, and so very, very large. Lots to do, and to use your expertise and all the skills that you acquire. And then personally, I have been married over a decade. So yes, I've made it past that 10 mark. We have 2 beautiful girls. My wife is actually in education as well. And I do have to get a shout out to a couple family members. I am the oldest of 3. And I laugh because as I look at my name on the screen and see my credentials after it, I'm losing the battle with my sisters. One of my sisters has her doctorates in pharmacy and doing amazing work with the University of Michigan, and the other one is a school counselor with Chicago Public Schools and is doing epic work there. And she's also almost finishing her admin degree. So I think next time we have a family reunion, I'm going to have to think about something else to get because they're definitely winning the add to the credentials at adding the credentials to your last name. So
well, and I'll turn it over to Trudy. Right, because you're getting to do this webinar for so many educators around the country. So you can brag a little bit about that. I've got you beat, Chris. I've been married for 30 years. So three children here in Waco, Texas, but I've lived all over the country. I've lived in North and South Dakota. So shout out to those Dakota educators that I saw that are here, along with work in Los Angeles and New Jersey, and then finally working here in Waco, Waco, Texas. And it is such a privilege to come together and talk about behavior and the difference that we can make for tier three students who have tier three behavior needs. We know from the research that a lot of these kids don't have great life outcomes. So when you apply yourself to reaching students who have big behavior challenges, you really are changing the trajectory of a child's life. And we want to share with you some things that will really make a difference, things that we've learned along the way. We're going to share some of our mistakes, a lot of resources that we found helpful to us. So let's dive right in. We're going to talk today about some system level things that will make tier three behavior intervention even possible at your district. Without these factors, hard to even get it off the ground. And then we want to talk about some practical things that Chris and I have learned to make your tier three behavior intervention just feasible, more likely to happen. You can have some of the greatest systems, but if it doesn't really take into account the reality on the ground and the challenges that we're currently facing, teacher shortages, so much bigger behavioral needs starting earlier. Those little ones are cropping up with really big behavior needs too. So we want to talk about how to make it practical. And then we're going to leave some time for questions and answers at the end. So we're going to talk I want to touch on tier three behavior and MTSS. If you're not familiar with this language of MTSS or multi-tiered system of support, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but I encourage you to dig in. We're going to send you some resources that have to do directly with this. But really what MTSS is a way of organizing all of the resources that you have available to you to reach all of your students. So you take what you've got, you want to align it together into a system to make the very best use of your staff, your resources, your time, and your space, and to reach the whole child and to think it's not just an academic issue or just a behavior issue. These things so often go together. And so we want to think big picture about supporting students as whole people. That framework, when it's applied to behavior, is called MTSS behavior, or sometimes it's also called positive behavior interventions and supports, or PBIS. And you may have heard of PBIS just in terms of points and parties and things like that, but really, that's just a tiny, tiny component of PBIS. Really, it's a full-fledged way of organizing your supports for students with behavioral challenges. So today we're going to talk a lot about that continuum of behavior interventions. Now, we do want to acknowledge that a positive school climate, good structure, clear expectations really do make a difference, especially for our tier three behavior kids. And we know that we need good data-driven decision-making in order to adjust and adapt what we're doing at the individual student level and also at the district level. We want to acknowledge that. And so it leads us to this first pitfall we're going to share with you. And that is that trying to provide intensive intervention without good school-wide supports is totally overwhelming. Have you found that to be true, Chris, in your case, that if you don't have good overall support?
Yes, indeed. It's almost like Swiss cheese. Lots of holes are present.
Yeah, that's a great visual for it. So one thing that I've said is that schools don't have staff time resources to implement an unlimited number of tier three plans for students. And if you see what actually goes into doing a tier three plan, I've had staff members just be like, you want us to do what? Like, it's very, very time consuming. It's expensive. It's expensive in terms of your time, your staffing, your space, everything. It really is a big undertaking, but one that is so worthwhile. So let's dig in a little bit to talk about the difference between district and campus planning and individual student planning. We're going to be focusing on this on the first today, but that's not to say that they're both not important. So there's the kind of tier three behavior planning we do to make that individual student planning possible. That's what we're talking about today. We're talking about the systems that support delivery of interventions. We'll touch real briefly on individual student behavior planning. That's super important too. We have some resources for that. But today we're talking about that underlying system. And so let's talk about those components that make tier three behavior intervention even possible. I've listed them. These are the ones that we're going to talk about, but we're going to do a poll. Which of these do you have in place? It's not a multi-select, so we weren't able to see all of them. But if you have one of these in place that's really working well for you, would you select that one? Or maybe you don't have any of these in place. So here are the critical factors: district and campus teams that oversee tier three behavior intervention, universal screening for behavior. How are you identifying the kids that need help? Designated staff and space, professional development and coaching, or none of the above. And from what I can see right now, we've got so many responses come in. I'll give it just another second. But it looks like the one that's being selected the most is that none of the above. And, you know, I'm going to go ahead and close that poll. And if we can share the results, Maureen, maybe I did the wrong thing. I don't know. But if we can share the results, I'll tell you that about a third of the people who just responded to that poll said that they don't have any of those things in place. And so that's not unusual when we do training like this to find out that actually we don't have any of those things. And so today we're going to talk about that and give you some resources that will help you build it out step by step. It can be a little bit overwhelming, and we want you to start where you are. I know you have some things in place to support students. So how can you build on where you are and then take it step by step? And I can tell you, when I started in my work in this, I was in a district that had none of those things in place. And so bit by bit by bit, we built a real working system to support our kids with tier three behavior needs. So let's talk about district teams. That was the very first thing that we mentioned. And Chris, I think you're going to tell us a little bit about district teams and how this functions in your district.
Yeah, and definitely, Trubi, to echo what you're saying, Rome was not built in a day. So give yourself patience and grace and highlight the great things that you're already doing. And so one big thing with us, because we are very, very large, is that with our size, we do have a district MTSS leadership team that is made up of key district stakeholders that could include executive director or director from student discipline, the multilingual department, student wellness and academic support, data use for school improvement. So really getting the key players together to help build that robust framework of how are we going to address staffing and funding and technology and the resource, and most importantly, the professional development. You don't know what you don't know. So we have to make sure that we have a very good idea of what professional development needs and to be able to give that to the boots on the ground. And so the other unique thing with North Carolina is that we have a facilitated assessment of MTSS, which at the district level and at the state level. And so if you love acronyms, we are really big with in CMS with acronyms. That is called the FAM-S and the FAM-D. So all of our schools engage in the FAM-S, which is a tool that measures school progress towards full implementation of a multi-tiered system of support. And really the big purpose of schools engaging in this is that the results of the data that we get is going to help schools and administration identify and prioritize implementation steps. Going back to Rome was not built in a day. So we have to be able to kind of see and hear where we're at to start building off of that. And so the good thing is from the district team is that they take that assessment themselves. And then it's very, to have that alignment, it's really good to see, well, what are our schools saying? And then maybe what the district team's saying, do we have clear expectations or not? And so, which obviously helps when we are tackling everything that you see highlighted on that screen.
Chris, I love that you said that because rubrics really help us direct this work. In fact, we're going to share several rubrics that you can help that you can use to help guide this step by step. So I love the way that a rubric can help guide that work. I think that's so important to have a roadmap. How do you know if you've arrived if you don't even have that step by step, you know, thing that says, yes, you've done it the right way. Here you go.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing I just want to highlight here is that we do have a crosswalk with the TFI, which is a tiered fidelity inventory with our FAMS. So we're able to really draw out specific items on that FAMS and how that relates to specifically what we're talking about right now, our supports around social emotional learning, attendance and behavior supports.
Love it.
So that's like our district, and then that kind of feeds into our campus. And so we have a couple consistent saying besides y'all. I had to learn that coming from Buffalo, New York. So I'm still acclimated to saying you guys, but we can't intervene out of a core issue. And so that's a big saying that we like to put on and start meetings, and that we are all MTSS. And so with the support of that district MTSS leadership team, our campus team specifically, and we'll get a peek behind the window and share some things around our student services PLC and that intensive team, will be well equipped with the tools and the resources to be successful, not only at tier three, but for tier two and at our core. So this is a little sneak peek behind our structure. And so the illustration here, this is our recommended teaming structure. We definitely don't want our schools to think that the team themselves to death, because there is a lot of teams that are happening, a lot of great work that is happening within the school building, but to really funnel all that into being very specific when we're thinking about the structure and the content that goes along with it. So this graphic will help show the teams that we have in place. You have the team, the MTSS leadership team, which is in green, and that is responsible for planning for our MTSS infrastructure. So thinking about like master scheduling, planning time, that professional development, from communicating core expectations, as well as analyzing school-wide data across all the domains of attendance, behavior, social emotional learning, and academics, and to determine that the health of what's going on with our core, kind of going back to that one of our sayings, you cannot intervene out of a core issue, to help support the PLCs in core strengthening if needed and intervention support. So the leadership and team is represents that core. And the multicolor teams, those are your grade level PLCs and student services PLCs. And then we represent the three tiered with these teams. They do all the work that addresses the needs for each one. So for example, if the grade level PLC analyzes data to plan for core instruction as well as intervention match for students who are not successful with only differentiated core, the student services supports core attendance, behavior, and SEL, as well as an intervention matching, we're all connected. There's like not a stone that's not on turn. We're really working collaboratively together. And then, of course, then you have that red team, which is our intensive team, which meets to do individual problem solving and intervention planning for individual students. So the big takeaway to help stamp what you're seeing here is, most importantly, within this illustration, there are built in those communication structures between these teams to ensure that we are meeting the needs of all of our students.
Yeah, you know, in some schools that are really small, they won't have anything this elaborate, but they still have to provide all of these functions. Sometimes it's almost the same people on all of these teams, but you have to have time set aside to talk about each one of these issues and then have an organized way of identifying who needs support, how are we going to provide it, who's going to serve. And then in larger districts, as you've said, I think it's so important to make sure that there's at least one person overlapping on these teams so that they can communicate back and forth. So for example, in our behavior PLC, what we would have called that on campuses, typically the academic RTI coordinator would sit in on those meetings because she was the one that scheduled all meetings. And we didn't want to have one behavior meeting and one academic meeting about the same student. We wanted to get everybody around the table. And so we tried as much as we could to have some overlap between, or as you said, a really good communication protocol to make sure that everybody's on the same page.
Yes, yes, yes. And that's a great springboard into these next few slides to kind of help. It's just not, here's a visual, like there's a lot of coaching and support that goes along with that. And so we do have a document that we share with the school teams when we are coaching them to who should be those members and the key responsibilities, and then how often should we be meeting. And a consistent member of all those teams, as you can imagine, is the administrator. We definitely want an administrator at each of those teams. And that way, we have found that more success is going to happen when we do have that. And so that is a good document to help clear team membership roles and some key responsibilities within those teams. And then we also, for that leadership team, have a month by month, starting back like all the way into August, of setting up your systems of support. And so what are those action steps that we can take to help build that impenetrable MTSS framework and all those systems within that?
I just love this layout and the way that you've done it, because it gives your teams a roadmap for the entire year. Like, this is what we're going to be working on right away. Again, time is limited. They cannot do everything at once. So building it out step by step, giving them the resources that they need to take back to their campus and, you know, set that up, it's just so helpful. Well, let's talk a little bit about screening. So screening is the next thing that we need to have in order to really provide great behavior support. And so identifying the students that need help is a critical part of MTSS, and being systematic about it. Kids fall through the cracks on this kind of thing all the time. Screening is what helps. Screening is like that safety net that prevents any kid from falling through the cracks. I'm going to share with you just a couple of options for screening. These are options that are integrated into the Branching Minds platform. So they're the ones that I'm most familiar with, and some that I've actually used here. The SRSSIE, Student Risk Screening Scale, internalizing and externalizing. Those two words are really important. In fact, I'm going to give them their own slide in just a second. So we're going to come back to the SRSSIE. There's also the SECA, which is a student-facing. This is freely available. It's great if you have it integrated into the technology that you already use. Otherwise, you're dealing with all kinds of spreadsheets and all of that. But you can just independently administer some of these assessments. The SECA is a student-facing assessment for older students in which they themselves identify their own challenges in social skills developments and competencies. And then the DESA is another really well-regarded, well-researched student strengths assessment. So these each hit a little bit of a different angle. There's, of course, lots of different ways to look at student behavior and what might be behind it. So the SRSSIE is a direct kind of behavioral risk screener, whereas the SECA and the DESA are student strengths assessments to kind of see what are their strengths that you can build on. Whereas the first one is what are the risk levels for the student in terms of poor outcomes. And so let me talk just a little bit more about that SRSSIE. This is such a great tool, and here's why. It is really, really easy to focus all effort on students with external behaviors like aggression, like elopement. You can't avoid those. You can't not address kids who are beating up other students or their teachers, who are verbally or physically violent. You cannot ignore a child who is running out your front door down the highway. You have to provide intervention for those things. These are also typically written up, so they show up in office discipline referrals, so you can flag it that way. It's really easy to focus all of your efforts there because it feels like the house is on fire when you have big external behaviors like aggression and elopement. But I will tell you that you are missing out if you are not screening on internalizing behaviors like withdrawal, depression, anxiety, loneliness. Those kids are every bit as deserving of our help. And I would argue that that the safety of that student and others are also every bit as dependent, because these are the students who often can end up feeling hopeless, you know, and it can lead to violence against themselves and against others when they feel totally withdrawn, totally hopeless and disillusioned. And so we want to reach those students. And if we can screen for this and see the signs early, identify those students and address them with additional supports, we can help change those outcomes and give them a more positive future. And so, you know, those are the kids that just might have their hoodie up, they're in the back, and no one's paying any attention. We want to catch those students too. So I really encourage you to use a screening tool like the SRSSIE that will capture both those externalizing factors and the internalizing factors. Don't just use your office discipline referrals to screen. If that's all you've got, it's a good starting point. You know, if a kid's been sent to the office five times, you need to talk about it. But don't just rely on that alone. You need a fuller picture so that those kids with internalizing issues aren't missed. All right, let's talk a little bit about designated staff and space. And I know that this is an issue. It's already come up in our questions. What do we do? We don't have a place and we don't have a person to deal with these big tier three behavior issues. And so I've got a fun question for you. We're going to drop these in the chat. We have a lot of attendees, so it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of answers here, but it could be a little bit fun. Here's my question for you. If you don't have a place and a person to deal with tier three behavior, the tier three behavior is still going to occur. They're going to take up somebody's time and they're going to take up somebody's space. Who is it going to be? Is it going to be your counselor? Is it going to be your assistant principal? Where is it going to happen? I have ended up trying to de-escalate some tier three behavior in some crazy places. So here's my question for you. What is the strangest place that you found yourself dealing with challenging behavior, whether planned or unplanned? So for a while, I was serving a school where the only space available for me to do behavior intervention for kids with really challenging behavior was the stage of the CAFA gymnasium. So we would love it in the chat box if you would go ahead and this is your chance to share war stories. Anybody who does behavior, we all have war stories. So go ahead and share. Elevator, bathroom, classroom, janitor's closet, bathroom floor, stage. Somebody's sharing my stage experience there. Hallways, bathroom floor, top of parents' car.
Whoa,
I'm not even that surprised to hear that, because these kids have big challenging behaviors and it's going to come out somewhere. I have seen nurses, you know, the school nurse ends up, you know, that's the kid's person. The kid ends up spending all day in the nurse's office while they're trying to get it together. Somebody is going to have to deal with it. And so even if you don't currently have designated staff and space, first of all, I would argue that it's time to get some, If you're a district administrator here and you are having tier three behavior challenges in your district, I would strongly encourage you, if at all possible, to take some resources and put them towards designated staff space resources for tier three behavior, because it has such an impact, not just on that student, but on all of the students and your staff in the environment. An AP who has nowhere to go and no one to help with students who need real skillful intervention is going to be shut down. They're not going to be able to do their other responsibilities. So I want to give you just a couple of practical things that have helped for us. One is that someone on the campus gets that training and has it as part of their job description, even if it's not their main job description. Here, and what you can do in that situation is that when the need arises, someone else can step in and do that person's regular role so that they can step out and deal with the tier three behavior, both planned and unplanned. So for example, I worked with a wonderful school counselor. The campus had had a behavior interventionist, lost it, was now falling all to this school counselor, and they were in reactive mode. They were chasing this kid all day long. He wasn't getting anything done anyway. It's not like he could do his job. And so we sat down together as a school staff and said, what if this counselor begins to provide proactive tier 3 behavior intervention, which is going to be really intensive and time consuming for a while. And then another person will take over some of these counseling duties that he was doing. In terms, you know, he had several things that were going on, but there was another person on campus who was able to deal with those so that he could move into that role. And I will tell you, it took about 3 weeks for the change to happen. And we had what I would say an almost miraculous change in this young person's life, who went from being in class maybe 10% of the time to being in class 80 to 90% of the time or more. You're going to spend the time. Why not spend it in a proactive, meaningful way, getting ahead of the behavior? You're not going to be able to get away from it. So really think carefully about how you can make space and staff and resources to deal with these big behavior challenges. They're not going away. They're not getting less. If anything, what we hear is we've got more and more students who are dealing with big behavior challenges. So there's my soapbox. I know some of you are like, preach, preach. I know you know that, but I just want to say it out loud that it's so, so important. So Chris, in your huge district, tell us a little bit about what you're providing. And I noticed you didn't necessarily have behavior staff on every campus. So talk a little bit about what this looks like at Charlotte Mecklenburg.
Yeah, so like Trudy's saying, there's no I in team. So we have to be able to come together as a team and have that team approach, especially even, and I'm, of course, I'm biased when it comes to those very challenging behaviors, because it's, you may need to be, you tap out for a little bit and rely on your colleague to be able to come in and give you a little bit of a breather. So there's definitely, we have to have that team approach. And so every school in Charlotte Mecklenburg, we do have a counselor at every school. We have at least an itinerant school psychologist. We may have a social worker as well. And then schools may have a what we call a BMT, which is a behavior modification technician, to work together as a team to put together a support plan for that student. But also, most importantly, to that proactive as well. Like, how can we be proactive and what is our data saying that will lead to some of those proactive measures? And then from the district, we do have some supports as well, especially with those severe challenging behaviors, where we do have some BMT specialists. We have some core behavior specialists. We have an SEL specialist. We have intensive behavior coordinators as well to rally the troops together. And that way it's we're all together to solve not only what's going on, but then also how do we be more proactive and rather than reactive. So yeah, a lot of push in, a lot of support. It just can't be one person doing this work. And as we'll get into a little bit later of like what that kind of can look like. But I definitely echo what Trudy is saying, because it's we have to come together and bring all of our skills and talents that we have, because each one of us has that. And so and play to those strengths. So that's kind of like how we handle that at our within our school system.
Yeah. So one thing I faced, I do want to put a pitfall here, and that is underskilled or overwhelmed behavior staff can actually make things worse. So do be cautious about this. I've worked with districts who thought, well, we'll just hire a lot of paraprofessional staff to deal with our behavior. And you know, they're less expensive, and some of them are just, they're wonderful, and they can provide a really nice connection with the community. You know, sometimes they're neighbors and aunties and so forth, and they really know the kids. But sometimes if they become overwhelmed or they don't have the skills or the training or the support, you can actually have a lot of negative interactions with your students. So make sure when you do have behavior staff, they are trained and they are protected in their role as a positive intervention support, not somebody who stands in the hallway and yells at kids or is like an easy button to get kids out of their classrooms, but instead that they are in a proactive role, a relationship building role that can be really important with the behavior staff that you do have. Let's talk a little bit about professional development. Of course, there's all kinds of individual professional development that needs to happen for people who are actually providing the interventions. But what about the teams? Chris, you want to talk about this just for a moment?
Yeah. And this is where I was saying, remember our visual with that teaming structure. So within that Student Services PLC, that team and the team itself, those members that make up the team, which would be your social worker, your counselor, your nurse, your BMT, that they have time to not only conduct planning for their service delivery, but also that continuous improvement. So we really emphasize a big push of making sure those individuals and that team has the time to be able to attend any professional development, just like our friends from the academics PLC, they'll have those that planning time as well. Like student services team will have to have that built in. Of course, then that's why we try to emphasize that right in the beginning. So because it's hard to get time back once the school year has started. So that is definitely a big, we try to stamp that right in the beginning of the school year, because that having that time to be able to unpack, like, how does our team itself fit within this MTSS framework? What data do we need to look at? What skills do I have in my toolbox that I need to attend and get more training in? Progress monitoring, that's huge. There's different progress monitoring templates of how we are going to do that, but like it's going to be more successful when we are unified in what maybe the platforms that we have to help with that progress monitoring, because you want to make sure whatever supports that you're putting in place, you're able to see, is that working or not? And so, and sometimes it's when you start getting that progress monitoring data back, we like to look through the lens of ICE, through, well, what's going on with the instruction, what's going on with that curriculum, what's going on with the environment, and then most importantly, what's going on with the learner, to help unpack that progress monitoring data to make those next determinations. And then FBA, BIP, I know that can be very, very scary, but it's extremely beneficial to work together as a team if we do need to conduct that FBA, because it takes time to really conduct a full blown FBA and put together a solid behavior intervention plan.
So I had mentioned earlier that we have all of these rubrics to guide the work. We're finishing out our section now on what makes behavior intervention even possible. Like, these are the things that you need in place to make it possible. And these resources have been extremely helpful to both Chris and to I, starting with the tiered fidelity inventory. This is a freely available resource through pbis.org, the National Behavior Support Organization. They have a whole technology to support it as well. It's free to use. I used this for many years. And as soon as we started measuring it, we started seeing results. The TFI is a fantastic resource. Check it out and use it. PBIS.org also has some great tier three behavior resources directly, just like to take you right, like think about this for tier three. So Branching Minds, I use this as well. They have a self-assessment of MTSS implementation. And we have a whole guide that goes together with that. And so I'd encourage you to check that out. And then North Carolina has a website. A lot of their resources are freely available. So what Chris mentioned about the FAM-S and the FAM-D are there. So you can see some of those resources there as well. And so if you don't currently have a rubric that's guiding your work, that would be a great next step. All right. I promised that we would touch on individual behavior support planning. This could be a whole day, week, whatever of training in itself. We're just going to touch on it. I want to give you a couple of resources and then we're going to move on because our hour is quickly slipping away. So what makes a tier three behavior plan distinctive is that it's multidisciplinary. It's based on function of behavior. You know, Chris just mentioned that FBA. Even if you don't have a full-blown FBA, you know, a lot of these kids are not special ed or maybe they didn't qualify for special ed, but they still have big behavior needs. We can think functionally about behavior. Everyone in your campus can be trained to think functionally about behavior. What's the underlying cause? What might be triggering this behavior? What might be maintaining this behavior and causing it to continue? And then here's the biggest deal, which is that comprehensive support. If you're wondering what goes into that, check out the TFI, the comprehensive support where you are really thinking through every single factor that might be going into this complicated behavior, and then wraparound services. So it is a really a big comprehensive kind of plan that goes into changing tier three behavior. And then here are some resources we want to share with you as well. This is the behavior support plan template that I used in my district that we developed. And we're going to share that with you along with a couple of webinars that I've done about tier three behavior planning along with some colleagues and district partners around the country. So if you're interested in learning a little bit more about individual behavior planning, those are some resources that might be helpful to you. And then some step-by-step guidance for doing this. This is a rubric that Chris's district has put together because part of the issue here is that we don't have everything pulled together in one place that says, first do this, then do this. This is where it goes. This is where the resources are. Like having something that pulls all of that together and puts it in one place is amazing. And you're going to see right on his page that he has there. This is just a screenshot of it, but that he's giving instructions about where to keep all of this. And that's Branching Minds. That's part of what Branching Minds does. So when we brought Branching Minds into my district, I finally had a place, like an MTSS platform, to keep all of this information in these plans. It makes a big difference. Chris, do you want to say something
huge difference when it comes to being able to unpack the data and a place to be able to store and celebrate the successes. So I can't say enough and think very thankful that our district implements Branching Minds because it makes my job that much more easier.
I really went from spending a great deal of my time just looking for the plan itself, like where is the student's plan, to knowing where everything is, including the progress monitoring data, the meeting notes, like having everything in one place, and that whole child picture too. Like you see the child is struggling, and then you also see, oh, they're in seventh grade and they can't read. Might have something to do with it. You know, like it just gives you that bigger picture about what student needs are. All right, we're going to move now into making tier three behavior intervention practical. So these are some practical tips that Chris and I have put together for you to talk about how to make this actually work in the real world of schools, because it's tough in schools. So we're going to do another poll. Which of these practical tier three behavior intervention practices do you have in place? So if there's one of these that you're doing really effectively, go ahead and share that. So we're launching this poll now. Tier three intervention structures and content. So for example, what Chris just shared, like here's how to create a tier three plan, step by step with all of the resources. Your plan details are all together in a place where everybody who needs to see the plan can see it. You have visual behavior data, family communication and involvement, none of the above. All right, so it looks like we can see, I think you can all see what the results are here. We have a lot of folks that are doing a great job with family communication. So that's really important to see. Very few who have those first three factors in place. And then several who say, hey, we really need help with all of the above. And we really, we feel your pain because it's very challenging at the tier three level to be thinking through all of this. These are the kids who are, you're making lots and lots of phone calls home, but they don't tend to be positive phone calls home. So building that family relationship can be really, really challenging. So let's talk a little bit about each one of these. First of all, we have the standard treatment protocol. The standard treatment protocol means that you have a way of doing things that's written down so everybody knows what the expectations are. Just that step can make a big difference. What Chris just showed you, that's a structure. That standard treatment protocol, that's a structure that makes it easier to provide tier three behavior intervention in the school. A structure like check in, check out, that is where a student has a mentor that they're meeting with beginning and end of the day, and they're getting feedback from the teacher throughout the day. Check in, check out, it's typically a tier two intervention, but we can individualize it and intensify it for our tier three kids. Just makes it possible to give more feedback and to collect the data that you need. I'm going to mention a couple resources from Safe and Civil Schools. If you're familiar with Safe and Civil Schools, I'll give them a shout out. I love a lot of their resources for behavior. The PASS model, I used to say Branching Minds and the PASS model are the two things that I'll die on that hill. Like, I love these things for the difference that they've made in my work. The PASS model is a way of organizing push-in support for kids with big behavior challenges. Originally designed for kids who have emotional disturbance. I used it in my district for kids. We used it for that, but also for kids who weren't identified as special education, but who had big behavior needs and saw some incredible success for students with behavior challenges. First step next is for the littles. It's kind of like PASS, but for the littles. And I really, really like this. It's a little bit spendy, but you don't need lots and lots of kits. But to get one kit and have that available for those little ones made a big difference for a lot of our campuses. And then tier one and two supports continued and adapted as needed. More than anyone, our tier three kids need really good, positive, warm school climates, lots of relationship building, lots of connection, clear expectations, all of those things, recognition for when they do well. All of that. So then we also have content. So we just talked about structure, right? These are not the actual content. They're the structure that makes providing the content or the intervention possible. We need to also talk about intervention content that's designed for school. School's not a therapeutic setting. So there are a lot of things you can't do at school that maybe you can do at an ABA clinic or you can, you know, do in therapy, but that's not what school is. And so having social and emotional skills curriculum that's aligned with your school-wide program is great. Intensive intervention strategies, resources. I would mention Safe and Civil Schools again. They have some wonderful resources for individualized intervention, wraparound and mental health support coordinated in school. We were just getting into this in my district and what a difference it can make if you have these agreements where some of these services can be provided within the school setting as part of a kid's tier three behavior intervention plan. All right. Chris is sharing with you here a screenshot of his own standard treatment protocol. I was like, this will be the most popular slide of our entire presentation, guaranteed. So talk us through it, Chris.
Yeah. So we developed this to make sure all of our schools have equitable resources. And everything that you see here with in the columns for tier two are all our interventions. And inside, if you, you're able to click on that link and it opens up an intervention summary that talks about everything that you would need to do to deliver that intervention, potential training that is coming up if you're not sure how to implement that intervention. So the big thing I just want to draw the attention to with our standard treatment protocol is that, and some of you on this call may be experienced as well, is we may have this research evidence-based intervention, but we have to get parent permission in order to deliver that intervention. And so we may have a behavior that we're not able to really match that with the most appropriate intervention because for whatever reason that may be, we're not able to get that permission. So we work really, really hard and emphasize a lot around making sure that we have open lines of communication with families and try to like figure out like, well, how come you're not wanting to have your child have support within this. So that's our standard treatment protocol. It is very, very robust. And I have to be, I'm very, very biased in the cognitive behavior counseling is the biggest bang for your buck, I think, from what we offer with our kind of like menu of choices. And so going back to Branching Minds, what's really, really cool about Branching Minds is that everything that is on that standard treatment protocol, is in Branching Minds. So when you develop a plan, you're going to be able to find that intervention that's going to be directly aligned to our standard treatment protocol. So that way we know it's equitable. And then we also can kind of help track on, well, what intervention is being used? What's not working? And so like from the district team, we can then figure out, like, do we need to enhance that standard treatment protocol? Do we need to take something out? So it's very, very helpful to be able to not only have that in the Branching Minds library, but the data that we're able to extract from that is extremely helpful.
Oh, it's so big. Like in my own district, when I was able to get into that library, and they had like hundreds and hundreds of behavioral interventions in there. But I could take what we were using, our standard treatment protocol, lift those up to the top and put in to that library all the links that they need, all the instructions they need, why to use it, how to use it. It's all kept together in one place. Just made it so, so much easier. So I absolutely agree. This was a game changer. This was a game changer for us for sure. Another thing that was really helpful, and again, we're showing Branching Minds here. This is what we're really familiar with and what I was able to use, is that you finally have some easily accessible plan details. I mentioned that I spent a lot of time just trying to figure out, does this kid have a plan? I had hundreds of students with behavior intervention plans across the district, and I often just could not figure out where the plan was being kept. Sometimes it was in a Google Drive. Sometimes it was just being emailed around. It was in a doc. You know, it was really hard. So once we had a standard treatment protocol and a place to keep it, I could see all of that here. In addition, I could screen for kids who had been identified, like this student right here, Ashley Fletcher. She'd been identified as having tier 3 behavioral needs, but that little red mark there means she doesn't have a plan. So she's been identified with a need, but has no active plan. That was a really big deal for me. In Texas, where I was serving at that time, they had a new regulation that all students coming out of disciplinary alternative education placement had to have a tier 3 behavior plan in place when they went back to the campus within 5 days of returning to the campus. This gave me a way of seeing, was the campus actually doing that planning? Was the plan put in place? And then is somebody actually carrying out the plan? Is someone progress monitoring the plan? So it was a really, really helpful thing for me to be able to see across the district. And I'm sure for you, Chris, with that many students, like this would be an overwhelming thing to try to manage without some kind of platform, I'm sure.
Yes. Yes. The pen and paper did not do this justice.
No. Or the folders, yes. Getting passed around and around. I mean, that's when I started in education, it was these folders that would get passed around. And, you know, if you're in a district, especially a district with high needs, a lot of kids with plans, those kids also tend to move campuses a lot. So, you know, you'd have these kids that were moving campus to campus and you would lose weeks and months when you could have just pulled up their plan. It goes with them to the next school and see, oh, this, here's the kid's plan. Here's what they were doing. Here's what was working. And just continue with the support that was already happening. So here's another example from the Branching Minds library, which is the tier 3 behavior support plan. This is something that I put into our own library, and it scaffolds you through building the plan, including when is it going to start? When is it going to end? Any details that go along with it. But the most important part, who is actually going to carry this out? So when we talk about making things practical, somebody's name has to be on that plan, that I'm the one who's going to be checking in. Doesn't mean that I'm the one who's doing everything in that plan, but it means I'm the one who's making sure that the plan is happening and really following through on that. All right. Here's another example action plan just to show you, like this, if you pulled up one student, you might see they have this overall behavior support plan. And then here are 3 interventions that people have been assigned to that they're working on with the student. And it gives you the capability of seeing all of that. And then finally, communication tracking. I saw some comments here in our attendee chat just about how important it is to have parental involvement. And this gives you a way of tracking how much interaction is happening with the parents. Like sometimes you'll realize that nobody's contacted the parent, or that 8 people have contacted the parent in the last week to tell them that their kid has terrible behavior. That's not helpful. So we want to really coordinate that, make sure that there are some positive messages going home as well. And communication tracking gives you a way of easily doing that. Couple of final pieces. For those of you who are district administrators or campus administrators, and you've built this tier 3 behavior system, how do you know that those interventions are actually being delivered? I don't know about you, Chris, but in my case, it was not that uncommon to have a beautifully written behavior plan that then nobody ever did anything with again. It was beautiful on paper. That doesn't necessarily mean that all of the teachers were informed, especially at secondary. It can get really complicated with all of these different teachers being aware of what the plan is, how this is going to work. And so what a platform like Branching Minds does is it pulls all of that information together into a to-do list for each teacher so that they can see clearly, here are the students that I'm working with this week that have plans. Maybe I'm responsible for providing reading intervention for this student along with behavior intervention. This group of students needs math intervention. Like this is what my intervention load is, and a very quick and easy way of saying, yep, I'm keeping up with it. Here's how it's going. Here's the progress monitoring. Or no, I'm not. And it gives us as administrators the ability to provide support. It's not intended as a gotcha. It's intended as, okay, I can see, like Yoni here, you can see on this screenshot, has many overdue to-dos on his to-do list. Well, let's find out what's going on. Maybe the students have been absent, or he has. Maybe he has no resources available, or the student's behavior is such that he's not been able to even deliver the intervention. So a big danger in behavior intervention is that change is happening, but it's happening slowly. And so we dump a plan that's actually working and go on to the next thing without giving it a chance. And that brings me to this last slide, which is seeing your data in a visual format. I mentioned the PASS model earlier. They have a way of collecting data so that you can see small changes. That's what you need. You need data. This is from the Branching Minds platform. It allows you to see time of day, day of week, what locations, classes are these behaviors happening? Are the interventions that we're putting in place correlating with these behavior patterns that we're seeing? Are we seeing a change? Is it getting better? So being able to see that in a visual format as opposed to a printout from your student information system, you know, some spreadsheets, you know, that's just really hard to see patterns there. We want to have some visual data that's available. So getting visual data to your campuses will make a big difference here. All right. We are almost to the top of the hour, Chris, but we have so many great questions and answers. So we want to thank everyone who's been with us. We are going to take time for these questions and answers. And we hope that you can stay, but if you can't, we certainly understand. Maureen, you're going to help us a little bit, just dig through some of these questions.
I am. And we are going to do our best to get to a couple. We won't get to all of them live, but we will follow up with folks to the best that we can get answers to your question. We have several questions about the BMTs and what their training looked like. Chris, can you speak to that?
Yeah. So with our trainings for our BMTs, it can look a little bit different depending on the background that someone may have, but we want to make sure that they are they understand the framework and that they're not they're there to be part of the team. They're not there to be the experts, even though they may have, if they do have that expertise kind of knowledge, they're helping to also build that school's capacity as well. So it's definitely all the training that we do is a big thing that we started doing this past year based on some feedback, is differentiating our training. And so, because we know, like, everyone's coming in at a different level. And so it could be the training on just for BMT understanding what the framework should look like, to these are the interventions that you're able to provide as well, to this is what your support that needs to look like in collaboration with the administration at that school. Because a lot of our district BMTs, they're there to help provide that support, but they're not going to be able to stay there long term. So we got to be able to kind of fade back that support. And so, and then if a school is able to purchase a BMT as well, then it's just, where do they fit within the framework, but then also from a district standpoint, from that PD that provide with the intervention and everything along those lines. It could be an in-house professional development within that team itself on, like, how do we as a team work together to address some opportunities of growth for ourselves. I hope that answered it. It's very layered, but we definitely want to make sure that we give everyone the knowledge that they need to be successful, because you don't know what you don't know. So,
yeah, I love that answer. And we also provided a lot of our own training in-house. But I would say if there are any state education agency people here, state resource center people here, if you and district folks, if you can help provide some of that training for campuses, campuses typically don't have the expertise or knowledge to be able to train their own tier three behavior intervention people. Of course they don't. That's what districts and state resources are for. I'll give a shout out to Region 13 in Texas. They provide an amazing behavior certification. We sent a lot of our paraprofessionals and our professionals through that certification process. So sometimes your state will have some resources like that for you as well that are just great.
Okay. Thank you, Trudy and Chris. I am going to squeeze in one more. Rachel, I hope that's okay. We'll try to go quickly. I know there are some questions we won't get to, but I did see several instances of a question about how this looks, or what advice you have for folks in smaller districts. Chris, I think you and Trudy talked about this a little bit earlier on, but I wanted to underscore it because we did have several questions come in. So to our small district folks, what advice you have? Where can they start? How should this look?
Well, I worked in a lot smaller district than Chris did. Mine was tiny compared to his. We had 23 schools, so that's not a small district per se. But I would say that a lot of the steps are exactly the same. It's just that you're going to have people that are filling multiple roles. Sometimes those smaller schools, not to say that they don't have big behavior challenges, but they might look a little bit different. You might be dealing more with attendance challenges or other things than big aggressive behaviors. So although, you know, aggressive behavior seems to be happening everywhere. Take a look at those rubrics. You can start with the TFI in a small district, in a large district, it doesn't matter. The TFI, the specific one that we shared, is a school campus-based TFI. There's also a district-based TFI. So if you're a district-level person, take a look at that. It's going to be on a smaller scale, but every single component is still going to have to be there. You're going to have to think through your funding, your resources, your staff, those structures. And even in a small district, I would really encourage you to look for some way of organizing all of those resources together. A platform like Branching Minds, a standard treatment protocol like Chris showed you, will make a difference for your educators. So it's a great question.
Okay, I think let's wrap it up here. I was tempted to squeeze in one more, but I am concerned we might be pushing our luck. I also recognize that folks who are on the line, you have jobs and students and other educators to get back to. So I think with that, we will wrap up for today. Thank you to the several hundred of you who are still hanging on the line here. We know this is a really challenging and important topic. So if you have had moments of like, gosh, I am really struggling with tier three behavior, you are not alone. And let the several thousand people who registered be a testament to that. We hope the resources shared today were helpful. Chris, Trudy, thank you. Thank you for lending your time and expertise. This was great. It seems like based on the chat, a lot of other folks benefited from this information as well. Thank you. We are so grateful for the time you spent today. Trudy, I'll let you talk a little bit about, this is our founder, Maya here, and about Branching Minds before we wrap up.
Yeah, I just want to finish by saying that Branching Minds really exists to bring this work together and make it practical. That's what it was all about. So our founder, Maya, was a teacher, and she was just looking for a way to make this practical. She had so many students with different needs. And so that the Branching Minds platform really grew out of that desire to meet teachers where they are and make this work practical for them. And so we would just love to hear from you and to connect with you. We have a lot of freely available resources, and it's been such an honor and a privilege to be with you today. Thank you so much, Chris, for sharing your expertise with us. This has been so great. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
We will bid you all adieu. Thank you again for joining us today. Trudy, thank you. Chris, Thanks to you for taking the time today, and to all of your colleagues at CMS who are doing this really great work. You all are just outstanding, and we're excited that we could celebrate you specifically and all of your colleagues today. And to all of you still on the line, I see some folks still trickling. Y'all are changing lives. You're doing really great work. We know this is hard. We hope today could help a little bit. So thanks to all of you. We look forward to learning with and from you again soon. Thanks, everyone.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.